yes, we could think about burnout as an individual's experience, but we do have to recognize that the organization in which this person works has a huge role in not only the development of or contribution to an individual's burnout, but also in helping to resolve that problem. And I think that part of the conversation is getting some more attention, which I'm happy to see, because organizations need to be part of the solution. They just can't give our employees tools to say, go do mindfulness and everything's going to be okay. It's not as simple as that. Now, tell me, Calvin, mindful life, mindful work, I think that all of the employees that you work with would be stress-free, right? I mean, be reasonable to accept this is your mission, but it doesn't come naturally for everybody. So does mindful life, mindful work engage in any specific like group practice at some degree of regularity or have some type of norm that reinforces that, hey, it's not just our mission to help other organizations, but we have to help ourselves?
Mindful Work is the official podcast brought to you by the Mindful Life, Mindful Work team. Amidst these rapidly changing times, our conversations will explore the intersection of self-awareness and team performance and help you to optimize your efforts through mindful work. On this episode of the Mindful Work Podcast, Calvin Niles explores with guests how mindful work connects to well-being, followed by insights from the Mindful Life Mindful Work team.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Mindful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Calvin Niles, and this is episode 9. Can you believe we are nearly at the end of the first season? And this episode is all about well-being in the workplace. According to Health and Well-being at Work 2022 report, this is by the Chartered Institute of Professional Development and Simply Health over here in the UK, they say that this year, there are already signs that the focus on health and well-being has waned slightly at the top table. 7 in 10 HR respondents agreed in the survey that employee well-being is on senior leaders' agendas, which is down 5% from the year before, while 42% think that senior leaders encourage a focus on mental well-being through their actions and behavior, compared with 48% the year before. It goes on to say later that now more than ever, we need leaders who are not afraid to show compassion, who consciously role model healthy working practices, and who foster an environment where people feel safe to speak about health issues and seek help. So we're going to explore this subject of well-being, but before we do, let us do what we always do on this show together, and let us take a mindful pause.
Pausing is so very important. When we pause, it's an acknowledgement that we can always start over. So wherever you are, if you're seated, notice yourself sitting here. If you're walking or standing or laying down, notice those things. I invite you to close your eyes if it feels safe and comfortable to do so. But wherever you are, notice that when you pause, you reset, you start over. You commence, you begin anew with an acknowledgement to what came before, just like any commencement, but with an eye to innovating and moving forward in some new way, to development, to growth. So we'll pause just for about 30 seconds. Notice yourself here in human form. Alive, awake. And hopefully you can carry this flavor or this intention or this way of being throughout the rest of your day and your week and your year. Notice that this is always available to you. You can always pause. You can always reset and begin anew. And it's really important to do that because you've grown, because you've changed from your past experiences. And when we pause, we acknowledge that and we move forward with that new capacity. So again, hopefully you found this helpful. Have a wonderful day of practice.
Welcome back, and thank you for taking that mindful pause with me. Well-being is a word on everyone's lips right now. To be well, happy, and successful is something many organizations strive for. The Merriam-Webster thesaurus describes the opposite of well-being as ill-being, and near opposites as unhealthiness, misery, sadness, suffering, and happiness, and more. But one word, not listed, is something that I have been hearing more of in recent times, and that word is burnout.
Burnout is, we have seen in the front line, you know, especially in the healthcare and first responders, essential worker, huge burnout, you know, even restaurant and the hospitality industries, huge burnout. But at the same time, in a corporate level also, so front line is burnout, then also the middle management is dealing with, because they are from the top also, they are accountable for making sure their teams are good. And they are, they're also finding hard to put their mask on before they can put on someone else's mask.
That was Sanjay Kapoor, who you have heard from in previous episodes of this season. And on the subject of wellness, another professional we heard from earlier in this season was Katie Gold.
So when it comes to my role as a program manager, one of the responsibilities that I have that's not really something that people would categorize as a responsibility is recognizing burnout. It's something that I think everyone experiences, you know, whether it's once a year, once in a lifetime, once a month. But recognizing the signs and then reaching out to those people and having those conversations of, is this mental burnout? Is this physical burnout? Is it emotional burnout? You know, how can we as a team support you to resolve your burnout? Do you need to go on vacation? Do you need to switch onto a new project that's maybe less demanding? Looking at our options and helping them is really important. But it goes back to identifying those. You know, if we don't know what the signs of burnout are, how can we identify it? You know, I could be burnout. I could probably have 2 weeks of burnout without noticing I'm burning out if I didn't critically look at myself and have the awareness of it.
Earlier in our conversation, Katie also shared more about her own journey with wellness.
So I would say really when it comes down to my studies, so I went to Emory University and I was looking into both the Eastern and Western approaches in medicine. So, you know, there's a lot of studies around Chinese medicine and some Tibetan approaches as well. And then I obviously studied, you know, the biology side and the human health side of it. So I was looking at it from two different lenses, seeing how we can actually merge them. And that merge often looks like wellness. Wellness is a huge umbrella of things that sometimes can be taboo. And I think people kind of stray from the core of wellness. But when you really look at it, you're seeing how different elements of your physical body, your emotional body, spiritual body, and mental body are intertwined. So how does your mind connect to your muscles? You know, how do your emotions connect to your nervous system? And, you know, the foundational level is just understanding that, which so many people don't because the education is just not there. You know, these are critical things that we should be teaching kids in elementary school and at very young ages. You know, when you're sad, what does that feel like for you? Can you express yourself when you're sad rather than sit with it and or push it down, which is what so many people do? And when we think about that in a way of studying it, it becomes a way of understanding that not one way is right. You know, when you're sick, Is it something that you need to go to the doctor for, or can you listen to your body and rest? You know, I used to be very different from where I am now, where if I had even the flu, I would work out every day and push through it. And you know what? I had the flu for probably a week, when if I just rested, I would have the flu for maybe 4 days, because I didn't listen to my body. So now where I see that come into play is, you know, is taking what I learned and the education I have and reflecting on it in my everyday life. So waking up every morning and just sitting there and seeing, am I feeling more awake than normal? Am I feeling sleepy? Am I feeling fatigued? Does my body hurt? And then having that change what kind of workout I'm going to do. You know, if I'm really sore and my energy levels are really low, I'm not going to push myself on a Peloton run, or, you know, push myself through something that's super high intensity. I might do a yoga flow, or I might go on an hour walk. And seeing how that changes how I feel throughout the rest of the day. You know, if I were to push myself after not getting enough sleep, my work ethic just goes out the door, and I'm waiting till my meetings end, and I'm dragging through the day. I'm not having my full attention, and you see it trickle into every aspect of your life just by that first moment of the day of not paying attention to how I'm feeling.
So how do we, not just as individuals, but as people leading, running, and participating in the structure of our organizations, to really promote mindful well-being in our workplace? So I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to Dr. Richard Safir, the Chief Medical Director of Employee Health and Well-being at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Richard Safir earned his Bachelor of Science in Nutritional Biochemistry at Cornell University under the tutelage of T. Colin Campbell, author of The China Study, before attending medical school at State University of New York at Buffalo. In addition to his role as the Medical Director of Employee Health and Wellbeing at Johns Hopkins Medicine, he leads the Healthy at Hopkins Employee Health and Wellbeing Strategy. He holds faculty appointments in the School of Medicine and Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of the Mindful Work Podcast. I am so delighted to have Dr. Richard Safir here, the Chief Medical Director of Employee Health and Wellbeing at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Rich, I'm so delighted to have you. We were laughing a second ago off camera, but glad to have you here and delighted to speak all about mindful work and well-being.
Well, it's great to be here, Calvin. I'm really honored that Mindful Life, Mindful Work has asked me to join you today, because I genuinely believe in your mission. So I'm happy to do this together.
Thank you so much. I know you have a huge responsibility in your role, and sometimes can be quite high pressured, if not all the time. And I know that mindfulness means a lot to you. We were talking about that a little while off camera as well. So I just wondered where this mindful life and mindful work became sort of part of your own life, and why?
Yeah, I mean, the irony behind someone invested in well-being as a career having stress doesn't escape me. I don't think I'm alone. I've been fortunate. I grew up with some healthy exercise habits and never smoked, never had a problem with drinking. Ate pretty well growing up, but in college I studied nutrition, so that really upped my nutrition game. It wasn't until I started doing yoga about 20 years ago that I started to realize I was having a hard time sitting still those first 5 minutes and those last 5 minutes, when the instructor was leading us through some mindfulness breathing or imagery, other mindfulness techniques. I'm like, I don't get this. And the further I rose in my career, the more I realized I really needed to figure this mindfulness thing out, because all of the research shows how beneficial it is to so many parts of our health and well-being. So Calvin, I took a 5-day mindfulness-based stress reduction retreat, And it was transformational. I was up at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, and it changed me as an individual and allowed me the insight that I needed to come back to Hopkins and help lead a strategy to make mindfulness more acceptable and accessible at Johns Hopkins Medicine.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I feel really privileged, actually, to be getting to speak to you right now about this, because I recognize that you and your work in Johns Hopkins specifically have been world leading, especially in recent times. So what does this thing, mindful work, even mean to you in the context of your own role as the chief medical director and working mindfully as a general support?
Yeah, I mean, work is stressful, and working in healthcare in the last 2.5 years has been particularly challenging. And while I appreciate the question about what does mindfulness mean to me, I'm also cognizant that we have more than 40,000 employees who have their own understanding of what mindfulness is to them. And so for me, it's trying to be present in the moment so that I'm acutely aware of not only how I'm feeling and what I can do to adjust to help myself feel better, but how I'm behaving and interacting with others so that I am not adding additional stress to the people around me. And so there's this constant balance. And, you know, again, I'm fortunate to have built a skill to have an ongoing introspection or check in with myself to measure how I'm doing and then adjust as needed. And at the same time, trying to help my colleagues both understand the benefits of having a mindful work day as well as learning the skills that could be part of that solution for them.
Yeah. You mentioned stress and the irony of stress, and I was remembering. So recently, somebody said to me, "Have you heard of what a migraine halo is?" Because of course, migraines are very much spoken about in the same breath as stress. And I said, "No, I don't even know what a migraine halo is. I don't even remember having a headache until maybe university or later." But now stress is a really commonly used word, should I say. And a lot of people are even using the word burnout, I'm finding in a lot of conversations. Is this something you're seeing as a prevalent kind of challenge? Is this a new piece, part of our vernacular that's coming up? Is this a real burnout, a genuinely increasing problem? And how does working mindfully help with that?
Sure. Well, I mean, statistically, the data is bearing out that it's becoming a more common phenomenon. However, I'm sure it's been around much longer than before it was defined. It's just that people couldn't put a name on it. And it also wasn't something that most people felt comfortable admitting. I mean, it's really along the same lines of making discussions around mental health more acceptable. And so there probably were people decades ago, a couple decades ago, who were feeling this as the tempo at work increased. You know, yes, we could think about burnout as an individual's experience, but we do have to recognize that the organization in which this person works has a huge role in not only the development of or contribution to an individual's burnout, but also in helping to resolve that problem. And I think that part of the conversation is getting some more attention, which I'm happy to see, because organizations need to be part of the solution. They just can't give our employees tools to say, go do mindfulness and everything's going to be okay. It's not as simple as that. Now, tell me, Calvin, mindful life, mindful work, I think that all of the employees that you work with would be stress-free, right? I mean, reasonable to expect this is your mission, but it doesn't come naturally for everybody. So does mindful life, mindful work engage in any specific like group practice at some degree of regularity or have a some type of norm that reinforces that, hey, it's not just our mission to help other organizations, but we have to help ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking that question. And I was trying to think of someone who I knew who didn't experience any stress at all. But I may have to come back to you on that one.
Yeah. Call me in a couple of years, I think.
But yeah, we do have regular practice sessions, and we are currently actually growing our community, which will involve weekly practice sessions that are open for professional networks. But you know, this is the thing. I think one of the things we discuss internally a lot, but also that is sort of coming out in this series of conversations that I've been having, is that, you know, people are starting to realize that there is no fixed destination, but more about the continual practicing and trying to do as best as you can in any given situation, which somehow seems to remove this like psychological pressure of saying, I should feel like this when I sit down and breathe or be present for 10 minutes or pause, which we do a lot in this show. So I think that's really one point I want to make on that response to your question. But yeah, and everybody has in our team, in our group, we have our own individual practices as well, of course, which is, I guess, central to living mindfully, right?
Right. We all have to find our way to practice, and it's easier when our colleagues practice. We can help support each other.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about, because John Hopkins Medicine, of course, and in your role as a doctor, you're worrying and or being, you're tasked with the well-being of the whole army of staff that you have. But then you're also, because you're a medical institution, a lot of people are relying on your insights, your information, and all the work that you do as doctors in the medical field as well. Do you feel that there is more pressure as a medical institution to live this well-being ethos? Or do you think it's just the same as any other organization who, you know, as a human being, we need to look after ourselves?
Well, we understand there's a real connection between the health and well-being of our workforce and our ability to deliver world-class care. I'm not sure we feel a necessary pressure about it, but we do recognize that this is a priority. It's actually been written into our strategic priorities for the last decade. And so we know that the institution specifically calls out our community's well-being, which is great to work for an organization that ranks it up there in the top priorities. But, you know, we're all people, and we all want to feel well. And that just doesn't just mean when we get home. We want to feel well throughout the workday. So we have a vested interest in helping our patients. We have a very strong sense of purpose. But we also have a vested interest in helping ourselves. We want to be well. I feel very fortunate that we have a large number of people who contribute to supporting our community. So it's not just the team that I represent. There's a group of chaplains that support our patients for sure, but also our employees who are looking for their support. We have a group of committed volunteers who are part of the Hopkins community who rise to the occasion when there's a stressful event in the workplace. We have a very active employee assistance program. We've got hundreds of Healthy at Hopkins champions. So we are very committed on a very broad level to support well-being in the workplace.
Yeah. I mean, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I actually remember when I was in corporate in my own days of how valuable having that infrastructure there and the company really living it and saying, yeah, we really mean this. This isn't just, you know, a tick in the box. So I'd love to know, maybe we'll come to that actually a bit later on about how companies can learn from the work that you do and what you're doing and any insights that maybe you've had, to how we can, as organizations,
really build that into the fabric of the way organizations live and work.
Let's make sure we come back to that.
Yes, please. Yeah. I really want to know. I mean, I've got a lot of paper here to take notes. But I wondered, Rich, like, what does a team that works mindfully look like in practice in your mind?
There's a lot of ways to answer that. I know that we all think of mindfulness primarily as an individual effort to support our own well-being. And yet I know that our well-being is influenced by the people on our team. You know, I promote a well-being culture model that's made up of six building blocks. And one of these building blocks is peer support. We are greatly influenced. Our health and our well-being is greatly influenced by the people around us. And I don't just mean our family and friends. I mean our coworkers as well. These are the people we spend most of our waking hours with. And so to have a mindful team, we need to not only pause and think about how we're feeling, but we need to pause and think about how the other person next to us is feeling. All too often, when we get stressed at work, we, meaning anybody who's joining us for this podcast today, we are more often quick to make assumptions and not allow ourselves to see the world through the eyes of the person or the team that we're working with. And a mindful team will recognize that we're all individuals working together. And that impacts the dynamics of our work together. And there are a lot of different skills and strategies and ways of thinking about how to create strong peer support and teamwork so that it's easier to be mindful together. And you know, we could have a whole podcast on that.
Can we? Yeah. I guess you talk a lot about this internally with your own sort of Ask the Expert series that you do as well. Are people talking a lot to you about this thing of well-being now, more so than, let's say, pre-COVID era? Are people just sort of more cognizant of it, not just because of COVID, triggered, of course, by the events of COVID, but is it just like a broader conversation now that people are saying, hey, we need to care for ourselves more. We need to be healthier and happier as a general point. Do you see, is that a bigger sort of thought?
Yeah, I mean, trend? The conversation around well-being has gotten bigger, both from a breadth perspective, what does it mean, what does well-being mean, as well as bigger in the context of who's getting involved with the conversation. Our leaders have always been supportive, but they're much more engaged now. Are all the way down to our managers, and because everybody's been impacted by this pandemic, and the people around us, the way the pandemic has impacted them influences our own well-being. So I think if you've been watching the news, you've realized that one of the groups that's been most impacted by the pandemic are the nursing population. And, you know, we have nurses, not a surprise, and they've been impacted. It's been very challenging. And so when, you know, they're feeling a greater level of stress, it impacts how the other people who support the nurses are feeling. And so we really need to all take care of each other. And, you know, I'm sorry that it took a pandemic to raise the magnitude of the conversation and to broaden it. But yes, we have really upped the conversation level.
Yeah. I'm really reflecting on this strong theme of interdependency, actually, as I'm listening to you, this social connections, caring for each other. Would you say that that's probably one of the more obvious parts of when we start to work with more a degree more mindfully, that we start to become more conscious of that interconnectedness? Or is it independent of becoming mindful?
Well, I think that we're all on our own mindful journey. We're all on our own well-being journey. if you're in a position of influencing the well-being journey of an organization or even a team, then you're going to benefit by expanding the way you look at this opportunity. And yes, our social connectedness is hugely important. I would recommend anyone who's interested in learning about the science behind this look at a book called Connected by James Fowler and Nicholas Christakis. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing Nicholas's last name. And I would say that that is, you know, one building block, this peer support idea. A second of the six building blocks that I propose that organizations follow when they're trying to build out a comprehensive well-being plan is something called social climate. And social climate is a collection of attributes that include a positive outlook. And so trying to see things with the cup half full, a sense of community, so that people on the team feel like they belong and there's a high level of trust and collegiality and collaboration. And the third component of that social climate building block is having a shared vision that the team is rowing together and that you're all moving towards the same goal. And so, Calvin, these are, you know, relatively easy for me to flip off my tongue, but the ability to actually put them into play so that it benefits the organization takes quite a bit of thought and effort.
Yeah, I can imagine. I remember having a conversation with someone recently, and they were like, well, you know, it's more for us, it's more than just, you know, putting some fruit bowls and, you know, free lunch in the canteen to entice people back to make them feel like they belong. We need something more fundamental. So I guess that's probably where the challenge comes in. Is that what you're kind of alluding to? The more fundamental aspect of really feeling like I belong here, I'm part of this?
That is one of the fundamental elements, yes. And Calvin, a couple of minutes ago, we talked about maybe getting back to this idea about a broader approach, and we can call it fundamental, we can call it foundational. And I previously mentioned that, you know, we subscribe to a well-being culture model. And the phrase well-being culture is used a lot, but not a lot of time has been spent on understanding how to build a well-being culture. And so I'm pretty excited. In January, Wiley is going to publish my book called A Cure for the Common Company, which is focused on how to build this well-being culture. And there are six building blocks. I've shared a couple with you. I think the message, though, I want to send the people who are listening today is that you don't have to guess how to build this foundation. And I recommend that you don't guess, because we all spend a lot of time and effort trying to support our communities. There's actually a prescription for a happier, healthier, and more resilient workforce. And I would love to be able to help more organizations find a broader level of support for their employees.
This is fantastic. Can you tell us the name? Did you say A Cure for the Common Company, did you say?
Yeah, A Cure for the Common Company. A little play on A Cure for the Common Cold.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's fantastic. When is that coming out? Is it January, was it?
Yeah, mid-January.
I'll be your first customer.
Okay. Well, thanks.
And I'm hoping to get a signed copy.
I would love to do that. I mean, part of this for me is connecting with other people. So Calvin, part of my well-being plan is social connectedness. And that's why I love having that's part of why I love having these conversations, because I love learning from other people and I love sharing.
Well, that brings us very close to the end of episode 9. I am full of gratitude to my guests who have made this show what it was, but we still have one more episode to go. We're going to hear more from Dr. Richard Safir, all about how to build a thriving and healthy organization, and from our other guests as well. So I'll just leave you with one practical tip that you can do, well, shared by Dr. Safir rather than me, to work more mindfully and in a way that will support your well-being for the rest of your day. Look forward to seeing you in episode 10. Bye for now.
Well, one practical way is, if you're listening to this conversation and you want to feel grounded. Well, hopefully Calvin and I are so engaging that you are completely focused on every word that we're sharing, because that actually means you're present. And being present is a good sign that you're being mindful. Now, if you find yourself distracted, that something else is going on around you and you can't pay attention and hang on to every word that Calvin and I are saying, maybe you need to turn off your cell phone or close your email box if you're listening or looking at this on another electronic device, because maybe those distractions are what's the cause of you not being present. You know, Calvin, sometimes, you know, I will make sure that both feet are on the ground like I am right now, because when I can feel my feet on the ground, I am thinking about that feeling instead of thinking about, hey, is it my turn to cook dinner tonight, or is it my wife's turn to cook dinner tonight? Because if I'm thinking about who's cooking dinner tonight, then I'm going to miss the question you're asking. So I have these little strategies, like making sure my feet are on the ground, that I'm sitting up straight when I'm having these conversations, to make sure that I am literally grounded. Everyone's got their own. I hate to limit it to one idea, Calvin, because that may not resonate with everybody. I'm sure if one of our listeners is interested, you can find something that's also quick, easy, and free that will work for you.
Mindful Work is the official podcast brought to you by Mindful Life Mindful Work Incorporated. To learn more about our work, visit www.mindfullifemindfulwork.com.